Welcome to the Emmy Louie Show. Today we're speaking with Cheryl Neal, and over the past 15 years, Cheryl Neal has inspired, motivated, and coached thousands of women to develop and implement change plans to create work and lives they love. She holds a bachelor's in education and human development from George Washington University and is pursuing a master's in transpersonal studies from Atlantic University. Cheryl is a professional member of the National Speakers Association, an image consultant, and is certified to facilitate purpose, mission, vision, and goal-setting sessions. Her work has been featured in The Washington Post, Essence, Black Enterprise, and on MoneyWise on PBS. And Cheryl Neal's name is spelled C-H-E-R-R-Y-L-N-E-I-L-L. And I welcome Cheryl Neal.
Thank you. How are you?
Great, great. Did I get that correct, Cheryl, all of that?
All that sounds good.
Very good. Very good. I know last time that we talked, and we were talking about how to integrate our spiritual lives with our regular lives, so to speak, and I was reminded about that a few weeks ago when I knew of a Reiki master who is a florist, and she has a florist shop, like a regular florist, and I've known her for over 5 years, and I know she does Reiki. She has Reiki sessions behind the scenes, but only 2 weeks ago did I see her actually advertise in a mainstream strip mall that she does Reiki. So I thought, wow, I wonder what made her do that now versus 5 years ago, and the kind of processes that people go to, and how to explain what they do, what they're developing, and all that. It seemed kind of, because those are some of the things that I think about, and how I have a hard time actually explaining to people what I like to do and what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, this is such a powerful and important time. I mean, we're in a 1 year, basically, universally. 2008 adds up to 10, which adds up to 1. And so we're all seeing the beginning of a new cycle, and people are starting, one, to want to use other services that have been labeled alternative or complementary or whatever, you know, for years. And people are looking for answers in all sorts of ways. And I think her sort of coming out with respect to her Reiki practice is an example of that. You know, another example is the fact that, you know, Oprah Winfrey, you know, for a while has been having her sort of alternative interviews on her Oxygen program or her XM radio program. You know, she did a recent hosting of Eckhart Tolle, the author of A New Earth, on, you know, on her internet, or I guess she did what do you call those? I don't even know the terminology.
Webcasts or something like that? Something that you download?
Exactly. But I saw her show maybe a couple of weeks ago, just channel surfing, and she was interviewing a rebirther, a regressor, a regression therapist on her regular show. So, you know, even that is a sign of things that are changing. She's moving those alternative things to her main network program and not just, you know, on her website or on XM radio and so forth. You know, so-called safe places, if you will, for alternative information. So people are searching and changing and looking for change in all sorts of directions, and I think that's manifesting everywhere.
I know. Even, like, massage, I see massage in mainstream strip malls. I see people looking for, what was it, this year? That people are looking for alternative medicine.
Yes.
More and more so. What is it? It was some statistic where it was something like half of people, or there's more people that actually do alternative medicine than actually see the regular doctor. It was
exactly.
Something like that. Did you get that number?
I don't remember the number, but I remember that it's very large, and also that Americans in particular, I think this statistic was about, have been going, you know, into their pockets, coming out of pocket to use alternative services actually for the last several years, services that their health insurance may or may not, you know, usually does not cover.
What I was thinking about, what this is, what we're talking about is kind of the, and I have this discussion with my husband a lot, it has to do with, because he has a master's in clinical studies, it has to do with proving things from a scientific standpoint, your right brain versus your left brain.
Yes.
And I know for you, you were a mathematician, right?
Yes.
And so it has to do with that, because what really astounds me about these statistics is that people say, well, is it proven that Reiki works? Is it proven that these alternative medicine or whatever you call it,
mm-hmm.
works? Is it proven? And there's an intuitive jump that people are making.
Exactly.
That's what it is. It's because I feel like for me, if it works for me and I feel good about it, that's good enough. But some other people might say, well, what are the statistics? Is it really proven that this works?
Yes. Yes, and proving and science are part of the left brain, you know, which is the masculine, if you will, the masculine way of thinking, you know, the masculine mental expression. The feminine mental expression is intuition, is knowing at a gut level that this feels right, or just having a sense that this is something I need to do. And so there's more of, you know, of the arising, if you will, of the feminine way of approaching things, just like there's rising of female power expressed openly, you know, throughout the world. I mean, we've got lots more women heads of state and heads of countries than we've had for the last millennia, at least. And it's all part of the rise of the feminine, the re-rise, the resurrection, if you will, of the feminine. And it just manifests on all levels. It manifests with the intuition becoming something that people are much more comfortable with, over the intellect, over the prove it, show me, prove it state. You know, it has to do with women coming into power in other ways, and it has to do with, you know, the high touch that's still needed with all the high tech, which is, again, our masculine brain and way of thinking and doing things. We still need the high touch. You know, people are using emails, but there's still those of us who pick up the phone, you know, want to have lunch, want to have face-to-face. Text messaging isn't enough. I think that's all part of this new millennium energy that's here.
I saw something on a show, a popular show, and it was a spoof on women, and this man was trying to get in touch with his feminine side, and he was sitting in a bathtub, and he called his guy friend and said, "Hello, I'm just saying hi."
Yes.
And the guy goes, "What are you doing? Just calling me to say hi?" And that really touched me, because I like to call my girlfriends once in a while to say hi.
Yes.
And I don't know if men do that.
I don't know if they do either.
but I was thinking, like, wow, we're so different.
Yes. Thank goodness.
we're so different. And now, as far as we're kind of, how does feminism work with all of this? Because we're at a point where we're kind of beyond that, and we're realizing that we got to fit into somewhere that is truly our own space.
Right.
Because you grew up at a time where feminism was pretty much, that was the norm, right?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. It was arising. But then there were, you know, issues around feminism versus womanism, you know, which is a little different.
Tell me about that.
Well, Alice Walker is the first person that I remember, and the first person I heard use the term womanism, which has more to do, a lot of the feminism had to, it was primarily a white woman's movement, if you will, and so women of color were not necessarily included in that way of thinking, and then women of color generally have a different experience with men and with husbands than, you know, than other women, than mainstream women, than white women, if you will. For example, women of color typically have had to work along with their husbands or, and partners, you know, and of all colors, versus the, at least the stereotypical picture, you know, of the woman who's at home taking care of the family and is not going out of the home to work. So the issues of feminism had to do primarily with the state, as I understand it, the state of white women with respect to men. Womanism is a broader term that, that takes into account a part of what it means to be a woman, not just what it means to be, you know, female in a relationship with a male. So I'm not sure if Alice meant all of that, but that's what that term womanism brings up to me. It's not just, you know, it's who you are as a woman as well as how you express yourself in a relationship, but in the world in general. That's a little different than sort of, you know, demonstrating for women's right to vote, which I associate with feminism, you know, or women's right to equal pay and equal benefits in a work environment, and to me, womanism also can help you deal with the issues outside of, you know, working. For example, okay, here's one thing that's coming to mind. You know, I think women in the feminist movement thought if they could get equal work for equal pay and they worked outside the home, then they would be necessarily an equal sharing or a more equitable sharing of work inside the home with their partners. But that didn't happen. You know, most women who went to work outside of the home found that they were still working inside the home, and that seems to still be the issue. So, again, now with this time of this new millennium, we're finding, you know, stay-at-home men, you know, there was a whole movie, I think, Mr. Mom.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of all of us, male and female, coming into our wholeness and the fact that we, you know, we each have masculine and feminine aspects, and how do we acknowledge that and express that, you know, honestly and clearly as our own individual selves, rather than trying to follow some pattern of what a stereotypical man is supposed to be or what a stereotypical woman is supposed to be. Does that make sense?
Yes, we have to think.
Yeah. We have to think and feel.
Yeah, we have to think and feel. And I love doing that, though. I love to think and feel.
Right. That's the whole approach. I mean, thinking, again, is the masculine brain expression, if you will, or mind expression. And feeling is the feminine. So we each have that. It's just that typically, you know, women are credited exclusively with the feeling part. You're so emotional, you know, versus men with the thinking. But we all think and feel. And so I think we each have to decide for ourselves, you know, who we are in terms of what that balance is between the thinking and the feeling, and the fact that, you know, the thinking is an idea and the feeling is an emotion, is an energy of emotion to it. And in order to create a product, you have to have both. You have to have the idea and you have to have the feeling, because if your heart's not in it, it's not going to work.
That's correct. And we're here with Cheryl Neal, who's a speaker and a coach. And we're getting back in touch with her. Her name is spelled S-H-E-R-R-Y-L. C-H-E-R-R-Y-L-N-E-I-L-L. And you can Google her name. I'm Emmy Bowie, and we'll take a short break, and we'll be back. I'm Emmy Bowie, and we're here with speaker and coach Cheryl Neal. And while we were talking about womanism and the concept of womanism and having your life in balance, I was thinking, wow, why don't we think of a real-life example? And the first example I could think of was that Cheryl Neal just got married this year. Is that correct, Cheryl?
Actually, last year, September 11th.
Okay. Oh, fascinating.
Yes.
Tell me all about it.
Well,
September 11th?
September 11th, 2007.
That opens up another can of worms as far as questions are concerned.
I'm sure.
Which one do you want to start with?
Where,
you go
where
first.
Do you want to begin?
You go first. Because the last time I actually interviewed you, you were single.
Yes.
Right? You were single, and then next thing I knew, oh, I'm married.
Yes.
But what happened? That was fast, wasn't it?
Was it 2 months? Would you say?
Was it just 2 months and you said, okay, let's get married?
Well, no, it's a longer story, so you have to cut me off here so I don't go on and on, but let's see if I can give you the highlights. My husband and I actually met and dated 30 years ago. That our relationship did not work at that time, and we had a not very pleasant breakup. And I told him, I said, yeah, you called me for 2 months and I hung up on you. And he said, no, I called you for 2 years. And you hung up on me. So over the years, he's just kept in touch, and we had a good friendship anyway. So it's mainly been on the phone because we never lived in the same city. And I don't know. I don't know what happened. We were just talking, and my mom passed in 05. I had been taking care of her, and I guess when she got ill, he started calling much more frequently, and then when she passed, he started calling every week. And he invited me to go on a jazz cruise because I was having a hard time dealing with the loss of my mom. And I tried all my little hideaways, and, you know, I was still stressing about that and missing her so much. So he suggested a jazz cruise. I agreed to go on. By the time the cruise was over, we were talking about dating long distance. And, you know, we would made an agreement about how long it would be between the time that we saw each other and so forth. We both loved to travel, so, you know, he would come here and I would go there. That was the plan. And that was in October of 06, I guess, when we did the cruise. And then January, we went on another cruise. And by the time that was over, we were talking about getting married. We don't even quite remember the details. It happened pretty quickly. So, that's the short version. Now, we had made a plan to, after the cruise, I wasn't much of a cruise person before that. I'm kind of a fly and get there and spend the time, you know, investigating the country and the people and the culture. So cruising was a new thing for me. It helped a lot, I think, that it was a theme cruise, like a music cruise, where there's just, you know, nonstop music. After we did the second cruise in January of 07, you know, he went online and found all these cool cruises, and he found a cruise that was 2 weeks that was not very much more than the 1 week jazz cruise we had taken. And it had a small booking amount, so we decided to go ahead and book it. Now, this was long before we decided to get married. So we booked that cruise, and it was, we were leaving on, I think, the 13th, either the 12th or the 13th of September for a two-week cruise to Beijing from Alaska. And so anyway, fast forward, once we decided to get married, we realized that we needed to get married, you know, just before that, because that was going to be our honeymoon. Little did we know at the time.
So you had, was it two cruises or three? You mentioned the jazz cruise.
Yeah.
And two in October of 2006.
There was a, yeah, and I get them mixed up. It was either I think the jazz cruise was in October of 06, and then the smooth jazz cruise was January of 07.
So there were two jazz cruises, and your third one would have been your honeymoon.
Right.
Gotcha.
Which ended up being September 13th.
Okay, so why 9/11?
Well, among other things, I'm a student and practitioner of astrology, And whenever you want to do something new, it's very good to have the energy of a new moon. And so I was looking, first of all, we were looking for a date that was as late as possible, because that's something I also didn't say. This was my first marriage, and at age 59. So I had a lot of people who couldn't believe that I was getting married and had to be there. You know, I was confirmed. I was a confirmed single woman. Loved being single. But anyway, so we needed to plan it as close to the honeymoon as possible to give us as much time as possible to plan a wedding. So we knew it was going to be in September. And September 11th happened to be the day of the new moon, not just an ordinary new moon, but a most powerful new moon, which is a solar eclipse. So the date kind of picked itself. It was really easy after that. And I must say, just to add to the mystery of it all, there is a system that I have been using and studying for the last 5 or 6 years called Destiny Cards. Have you heard of that?
I think you told me this.
Okay, by Robert Camp? Yeah. Well, anyway, in one of the many things that's in that book is a section on marriageability and marriage factors and so forth. Now, I've been studying this system just to understand individuals and do readings for individuals, myself included, for the year. I had never seen anything in this book about marriage. You know, it's an 8.5 by 11, 3-inch thick softback, so it's got lots of information. So one day I'm thumbing through the book, and there's this piece on marriage and marriageability factors and so forth, and it also has a table of the best marriage years for each card. Each birthday translates into a card, a regular playing card. And based on those cards, each card has best marriage dates in this book listed from age, you know, 0 to 99, basically. And so anyway, this particular day when I opened this book, I was so curious, and I looked to see when his best marriage dates were years. It's by age. And when my next ones were, and it turned out that there was an overlap. I don't know how rare that is, but it sounds pretty rare to me, of our next best marriage dates. And so 9/11 fell into that time too, basically, because it was that period was after his birthday in 07 and before my birthday in 07.
So this whole love story sounds very unusual, isn't it?
It is.
Or
it
am
is,
I dreaming?
It is a very unusual love story.
Is it unusual story for a woman, or is it also unusual story for a black woman?
I think it's an unusual story for a woman from any planet and any time period, and for a man as well. This is a very interesting story. I've just kind of hit, you know, the short parts because we don't have a lot of time. But it's
I'm
a story worth writing.
I'm thinking of Harry Met Sally. Have you ever seen Harry Met Sally, or is that for just white women?
Have I seen whom?
Harry Met Sally. It's the movie.
No. Oh, When Harry Met Sally. Yes,
yes.
Yes. It's one of my favorites, actually.
Yeah. Did you think about that movie?
I didn't.
Because I thought about that movie because the two main characters, they knew each other off and on.
Yes.
And they knew each other. I think it was a period of at least 10 years. I know because they got older and they were together when they were 40 and they were upset that they were 40 or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they were off and on and they were talking to each other about how to date other people. But
yes.
And then they realized that they wanted to date each other.
Yes.
So you didn't think about them? You didn't think about that movie?
I really didn't, mainly because, I mean, everything happened so fast in me. I mean, that was the last thing I suspected, was that we would ever get together in that way.
Exactly. That's exactly when Harry Met Sally, too.
Okay.
It was the last thing because whatever.
Yeah, I need to revisit it. I know I like that movie, and I haven't seen it in a long time, so maybe I need to see it again. But, yeah, I mean, neither of us ever suspected. And he had been married a number of times, and he said he was, after he got his last divorce, that he wasn't ever going to get married again. So he'd been married since he was 16.
And what was it? Was his third marriage?
Yeah, yes.
Wow.
So yeah. This was a very a very weird and unusual story. In fact, we both have talked about writing about it.
And then also a parent passing away is really a big deal for people,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. Very. Very. I mean, for 2 years I couldn't do anything, with respect, to her things and all that. I just cried a lot and missed her a lot and, remembered a lot.
Do you have siblings?
No.
So you're the only child?
I'm an only, yes.
I'm an only child, too, and I know someone who was an only child, and they were very, how would I say, they were mourning their loss of their mother.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's been, that's been the latest big challenge. But, it helps to know, spiritually, it helps to know that, she's still around and she's with me and that kind of thing. But there's still that, the fact is, they say we're spiritual beings living a human life, but we still have that human peace that doesn't let us just let go.
I know one of the first things I remember, even this person who lost, and he was an only child, and one of my friends who lost his mother, he said, and my mother was just around.
Yes.
Yesterday.
Yes.
And now they're not here. That's usually the first thing that they would say.
Yes. And I know for weeks, I'd wake up and I would, to tell her something, and I'm like, oops, And for a while, for the first year or two, that, led to tears and all, Mom. So it's been quite an adjustment, but it's also, something else that's happened as a result of it. It's like, I feel like, I guess probably being an only helped me feel this way too. I've always felt like a teenager. And so, after...
Feel like a teenager.
You said you feel like a teenager?
I feel like a teenager.
Yeah, I still do. And so, so after a while, especially after maybe a year or so, that my mom was gone, I thought, oh gosh, I have to be a grown up now.
I think that's what it is.
It's weird.
Because you're used to having a mother fawning, is it called fawning?
Yes.
Over you? Like,
yes.
Fussing over you?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, there's nobody that's fussing over
that.
You. What's
right.
going on? No one's fussing over me.
I know. It's like I have to do it over my, I have to fuss over myself. That's no fun.
I know. Being
and
fussed over is kind of, it's like a role.
It is.
And then you realize, I think it's like an ego role.
Yeah.
Ego role? Sounds weird, but...
Yes.
Like you're used to being in a certain relationship, and now when someone is not playing that relationship on physical terms in this world, then your
there.
Whole world is rocked because you're not relating the same way
anymore. Exactly. And
that's just one relationship.
Exactly. But, for me, I think, and I think for others, it frames so much of your relationships with other people. And I know for me, I didn't really think about it. But once she's gone out of her body, I have to think about it now. It's like anything that I would do, I would, get her opinion. She was very wise and very smart.
Okay.
And very personable and a lot of fun and,
We'll take a short break and we'll be back and talk about our relationships with our mothers. We're here with Cheryl Neal and I'm with, I'm Emmy Louie and you're listening to the Emmy Louie Show and we'll be back. We are back. I am Emmy Louie and we're here with speaker and coach Cheryl Neal. Her name is spelled CHERRYLNEILL. And we're talking about relationships and our first and foremost relationship is with our mothers. So
yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Well, we were just talking about how when, once you lose your mother, or your mother passes on, for me, one immediate response was, now I have to be the grown-up. And like you were saying, there's no one that's just there to just give you that unconditional love and fawn all over you, you know, regardless of how, you know, and the person who, no matter how old you are, you're still her baby, you know. So that changes our relationship with other people in the family and outside of the family. And for me, you know, this teenager who I am in my head and in my heart, I feel now I need to just be a grown-up with her, not just allow her to be a free-running teenager, you know. But also that's part of course, it's part of the cycle of life, and people, you know, their parents leave a different part, different ages of their lives. But for me in particular, this was significant, I think, because I'm having my Saturn return, and I talked about the astrology work that I do. Saturn is the planet of grown-ups and growing up and being responsible and of adulthood. And the Saturn return is a very powerful, powerful time. It first comes around 28 to 30 years of age, when you first become really an adult, when you first start to separate who you are from who you have thought you were based on your parents or your gender or your racial group or where you live or where you were born and so forth. And the second Saturn return, which comes around 58, 59, 60, which is where I am, is when you take that, you have those 30 years of being an adult, and now you're moving to another level where you're preparing to be a senior, or you are a senior. That is to say, now you must look at how you represent in the world, because there are people, younger people who are watching you. I mean, that always happens. But I think around the second Saturn return, people are much more conscious of the impression that they're making on the generation behind, and the significance with connecting with the elders and getting that wisdom as well. So people at Saturn return times around age 30, around age 60, around age 90, make big changes. People who've been single for years, a lot of times will get married at 30, or in my case, just about 60. People have been married, they divorce at those ages. A lot of people have children. I call them a lot of Saturn return babies, you know, are born to people who are around 28 to 30. If you live in one place, you might pick up and move completely to another place at that time. You know, there's just major changes happen at the Saturn return. So for me, my mother's passing was part of my Saturn return, sort of the beginning of it.
You said that you earlier, about 5 minutes ago, you said you had to be a grown-up to yourself. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I felt like I had to be a grown-up once my mom passed, because my father has passed 20 years ago. So, you know, without parents, you know, the sense that I had is like, now I have to act like a responsible adult, whatever that means. That's what I associate with being a grown-up, you know, versus a teenager. In my head, a teenager just goes and has a good time and does whatever and doesn't think about the consequences of things necessarily.
What struck me about what you said, too, is that you compare your relationships with other people based on your mother. At least, and you didn't think about that, but you realized that after she passed that you did that.
Yeah, I think that happens to all of us. I think as our parents leave, our relationships with others change. And I don't think we're necessarily conscious of it, but there's a subtle thing that happens. I don't know if it's because we start to take on part of that parental piece into our personalities, but there is some, you know, there is some shift that happens. When you have, as long as you have your parents, there's some way that you're relating, I think, you know, to yourself and to others that changes when one leaves, and then changes again when the other leaves and you don't have parents anymore. So that's what I was referring to.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. I am Emmy Louie, and we're here with Cheryl Neal, who's a speaker and a coach. And apparently Cheryl has been single for most of her adult life. Is that a correct way to put it?
Yep, 59 years.
So how does that feel, being a... how does that feel?
It's weird. It's very different. It is and it isn't. I think that...
Okay, I think what it is that you said you were a confirmed single person.
Yes.
And most single people after a certain age don't get married. Is
right.
that correct? Is there some statistic about that?
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah, I don't know about that. I just know that I was confirmed. But on the other hand, the only person on the planet that I've met so far that I would ever marry is my husband. I just never thought that we would get past the friendship that we've had the last, 25 years.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That is so.
And I'll tell you.
It seems almost like he replaced your mother. Does that sound kind of, is it called crass?
I don't know. I don't have a feeling about that. I mean, in terms of the term or whatever, it does look like that on the outside.
Has people ever said that?
No one said that.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what I went through with
uh-huh.
respect to it. I think it helped a lot the way that it popped up, because neither of us knew it was going to pop up. Like, I said something about on the cruise about, coming to get closure, because I realized I had always called this man my heart, the man who holds my heart. I think that's a lyric from a Luther Vandross song. And I thought, okay, from a spiritual standpoint, I have practiced my spiritual life through every aspect of life except a relationship, a partnership, okay? And now, again, this is just the way my mind works. With the numerology, my soul number is a 9, and a 9 soul is about completing and finishing and preparing to graduate in this lifetime. And so it came to me that in order for me to do that, I was going to have to deal with this partnership issue. Because it's like going to school, you have to pass all the courses in order to move to the next level. And so, I think this maybe came up too because of the Saturn return energy that I was feeling. But anyway, I said, in order for me to get completion, then I'm going to have to deal with this partnership issue. So I can no longer, ignore that area and say, I don't want to do this, it's too much work. So when I did that and we went on the second cruise, I thought, okay, because I've been calling this man, the man of my heart all these years, in order for me to be open to a relationship with my perfect partner, I'm going to have to get closure on this. And in fact, that's why I went on the first cruise, or was it the second one? Because I thought, here's an opportunity to, come to some kind of agreement or some kind of completion about how I feel about him all these years, because we're never going to have this kind of relationship that we had before when we were dating. And interestingly enough, we had lots of conversations on that cruise, which he initiated about, what happened 30 years ago and what's happened across the years and so forth and so on with respect to his marriages and so forth. And I told him, I said, I know you went back and forth about doing this cruise. What made you decide to come? And I said, I need to get closure with you because I need to be open to a relationship with my perfect partner. Well, interestingly enough, I think what happened was what he heard when I said that was that I had somebody waiting in the wings.
That's what I thought when you said that. You said the perfect partner. So I was thinking, is it someone else or is it me? Because you're talking, if I was the guy, who are you talking about?
Yes.
The perfect partner.
Yes. Well, I think that's how he read it, was that there was a person in mind. See, perfect partner, perfect, I do this series of workshops called Finding Your Perfect Work. Finding Your Perfect Work, and now Finding Your Perfect Fill in the Blank. So I talk a lot about perfect partner, perfect work, perfect house, perfect relationship, perfect health as the ideal that we're working toward. So when I said that, just like you said, I think he heard that there was a person I had in mind. There wasn't. But what I know is if I'm holding on to how I felt about him 30 years ago and him, you know, is the person in my heart, even though that's not what's happening in the outer world, then I don't have a space to invite a new person in. And because I think he heard that as there was someone waiting, then the conversation shifted. And that's where I think the talking about, you know, dating and then getting married came from.
I thought it was moving away from the mate marriage.
Hmm?
Because he didn't think it was him.
No, he didn't.
So you were just talking about it from a third person point of view.
Right.
So it kind of opened up things more when you were...
Well, I think because he thought it was someone in particular, he sort of, you know, made his move, if you will. That's when he started talking about, you know, how he felt before and, you know, that hadn't really changed. And
So he married once and then you met him, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I actually know of someone who is the person's first marriage and the other person was their third marriage.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, once we got married, we started hearing about lots of people like that. And we're hearing also a lot about like that, but also people who dated a long time ago. Like I know when we were on the cruise, I know we met at least four people who had stories of, you know, their friends or somebody in their family who had just gotten back with and married someone that they dated like 20 or more years ago.
And
or
you know
they were
what?
Sweethearts in high school. Or they
the
were
only
sweethearts.
Difference has to do with time.
Would you say?
It's time.
Yeah.
It's timing.
It's time. It's timing. Exactly. Because it's
in other words, I've always, for me, I said, okay, for this radio show, I've talked about, primarily talked about three topics. Or since I've been doing speaking engagements, I've been talking about three primary topics. One is home design back in 2000. Another one is architecture in general, green architecture. And then the mm-hmm. third one is feng shui.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, even the past 10 years, there's a flavor of the day. There's a flavor of the day. In other words, what of those three topics, what is the most hot right now?
Yes.
And that could be anything. In other words, if you had three things you wanted to do, it might not be the right time to do it at that moment.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if you wait long enough, it probably will be the right time eventually.
Right, and that's one of the things that I like about working with these systems like astrology and numerology and now destiny cards, because they're all basically, you know, they're oracular systems, but they're systems that have a certain measure of timing, both the universal timing and your own personal timing, which is, you know, framed by, generally speaking, by when you're born, when you're the timing that you came into this planet at. And because of that, you can get good timing information from these, you know, in other types of systems. Because it is about timing. And it's about understanding that it's not just this, there's not just this timing out here in the world, that we each have our own personal cycles that we're on. You know, each of your lifetimes, through the numerology, you can see what your lifetime cycle is about.
Do you ever introduce yourself as an astrologer?
Yeah, I have. Mm-hmm.
So you say, like I would say, oh, here's Cheryl Neal, and she's an astrologer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends on, you know, where I am and what, you know, if it's in an environment where people want to know about that. But,
and
yeah, it does come up.
And what you're talking about, these destiny cards, is that, I know people always ask, what kind of astrology is it? Do people always want to ask that? Like, where does that belong? What kind of astrology?
Yeah, the destiny cards basically, It's very, very old. It's supposed to be older than tarot, and it's supposed to, my understanding is that it's a combination of astrology, numerology, and not tarot, because it's older than tarot, but it is a card-based system. And so, you know, what I understand is that if you take any one of those, like astrology and numerology or Osho cards or any Native American animal cards, you know, if you go back far enough in the material that they're based upon, you'll come to the basic same body of information and body of knowledge. You know, which is basically there is timing in the universe. There are no accidents. You know, everything does happen for a reason, and these systems are sort of ways, doorways into understanding the reasoning and the timing. And it doesn't really matter which one you use, because they're all going to lead to the same place if you study, you know, if you study deep enough.
I know, and I know what you talked about. You said there's universal timing and then there's personal timing, because sometimes you might be ready, but however, there are circumstances not outside of you, but in the society where it's, in other words, here, 10 years ago, architects were talking about green architecture and sustainable living.
Yep.
And then now, here, mainstream, it's catching up.
It's time.
And so that's why I'm using as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And even global warming was argued about
mm-hmm.
4 years ago, and now it seems like it's a regular talk that you see on TV.
Right. All of a sudden, you know, everybody's onto it. And I think that's, again, tied to this new millennium, this particular year, 2008, which is a 1 year. It's the beginning of a 9-year cycle. And so now everyone knows all this stuff that those of us who have been in these specialties have been, you know, studying and talking about over the last several years, you know, and people thought we were so alternative, you know. Now everyone has come up to that understanding. Everyone's ready to go green, and everyone's ready to all of this, to use complementary medicine. You know, there was something on the mainstream news yesterday, some health program that was centered on fasting and detoxing. You know, it's been around for thousands of years, but all of a sudden people, the masses of people, not just the health food people, you know, are ready to try it and are trying it.
Also, what really struck me
mm-hmm.
When you're talking about this whole, we're talking about universal cycles, is that when we talk about global warming and climate change, it really hits home to think that what you do actually affects the entire planet physically.
Exactly.
That, okay. And it's a very great example of our collective consciousness, because
yes.
One of us, sure, if we don't do something or we do something, it's going to change the entire climate, but it's actually made up of all of us doing those things that are actually affecting these things.
Exactly.
So we actually do make a difference, because we are the people.
Yes, literally. We are making the climate.
Yeah, and here I am. I'm listening to We Are the World. I know that was popular 20 years ago, that song, We Are
yes,
the World.
Yes.
And I was thinking, wow.
We really are the world. We really are the world.
I know that sounds very trite.
Right, but it's so profound.
It is very profound.
And
that's why these people, some people are ahead of their time, because here Michael Jackson wrote this song, or
yes.
Well, a group of people or whatever
mm-hmm.
that wrote that song. And you go back to it 20 years later, 30 years later, it's the same message.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that's timeless.
Exactly.
And then so we talk about things that we do that are timeless, and at the same time, it's based on timing. Isn't
yes.
that the paradox?
Yes. Exactly. You know, which is the paradox of Earth School, if you will. I call it Earth School, because I think we're here to learn stuff. You know, it's we are, at the same time, we are one, and at the same time, we are individuals. And that's another paradox, because we are one because everything we do affects all the rest of us. But at the same time, we appear to be individuals, and we are individuals because we make our individual choices. But the impact is not just on us personally, it's on all of us. And the internet is a good, you know, a good example of how people can understand that consciously, because all the other efforts to lower the playing field among all the differences by gender or racial group or country of origin or whatever, you know, just the internet came along and now everybody can talk to everybody.
So you sound the same now that you're married.
I sound the same?
Yeah. Do people ever say that?
Huh?
Do people ever say that?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't remember anybody saying it.
Okay. Well, we've got to...
People say I have this glow. And I thought, I didn't have a glow before. I have heard that I have this glow.
So. Oh, you were already in your own...
Yeah.
Your own space, anyway.
I thought so.
Yeah. So we got a few more minutes.
Okay.
We just got one or two more minutes.
Yes. So, now is the time to start something new. And you've got that 2008 universal cycle of the one, and then everybody can figure out what their own cycle is, personal cycle, by taking their birthday and their month, adding that to the year of 2008, and reducing that, keep adding those digits together till you get to one digit, which will be between 1 and 9.
So let's pick today. Today is July 4th.
Today's July 4th, right?
So if someone was born today,
then they would add 7 + 4 + 2 + 8, and that's 7, 11, 12, 13. 21, so
yes.
This will be a 3-year for them.
Okay.
And the 3-year is about expressing your creativity, exploring, and self-expressing. It's also about emotional issues. So the 3 is a year of sort of the product, you know. So the 1 is the thought, the idea, the new spark.
I gotcha.
And 2 is the partnership, and 3 is the result.
The rebirthing. Fantastic, fantastic,
mm-hmm.
And I'm glad you're integrating all the astrology, numerology to your mathematics background,
yes,
and your coaching and all that. Thank you so much, Cheryl. I look forward to speaking with you next time. And
same here. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. I'm glad we get to get updated on your marriage and all that.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'll talk to you next time.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Emmy Louie.